What do you do when you feel ignored? It could be at work, online, or even by your own friends. In this episode, my good coaching friend James and I get together and get real about the moments when it feels like no one's listening. We're going to swap some stories from our own lives and explore why being ignored cuts so deep and share some strategies that helped us to turn that around, from setting boundaries with friends to persistence on stage. If you've ever wondered how to stop shrinking back and start being heard, you're going to want to stay with us right the way through this one.
Welcome into the virtual studio, James. This all came about from we both coach each other. And sometimes I think we both sort of come onto the course here, sometimes wondering what we're going to talk about. But it usually ends up being something interesting, right?
You shared the other day about reaching out to old contacts or something. You want to share more about that and this piece about being ignored?
Well, yeah. One of the things that sort of led into that conversation was I'd been having a conversation with another friend about healthy boundaries with friends who don't really act like friends. And I kind of felt like people who I had good relationship with and considered to be friends weren't still showing up as friends in my life.
Yeah.
Doing things that, you know, generally in a friendship, you think that's not really on. Just an example of that would be people who, because I live in Spain, like you do, people were coming and staying from the UK or wherever nearby to where I was living and not even letting me know they were here or not trying to arrange any kind of meetup. And I don't know, there's something about it to me. I can't really imagine being away for a week or 2 weeks, staying near to where I know one of my friends is, and not even saying, hey, do you want to come and meet up or do something together whilst we're here? Grab lunch, coffee, whatever. And so this is what this made me think, are we really friends? If you don't act like a friend, are you? So there are times definitely where I was feeling ignored by people who were supposed to be friends. I'm thinking, well, okay, I have to draw a line somewhere with this and say, you know what? I don't think we are friends if you're not treating me like a friend. But it led to us talking about how often we feel ignored in general, like I'm talking about having been looking for some opportunities and how now even just like certainly being over 50, you can end up feeling very ignored and left out.
Jobs. I know a friend of mine's a consultant, really clever guy in his 50s. He can't get a job because he's overqualified, but really a lot of it's down to age.
Yeah. And it sucks. The feeling is just so horrible. It's that sort of Saturday night and you're on your own and you want someone to talk to and you call your friends and nobody's around. So it's that kind of feeling. It's a bit low. And one of the things I was saying is like, you know, some of the opportunities I've been for just going to stop doing it because I feel worse doing it than I would feel not doing it. And I put my energy and focus into other things because it's not really what I want anyway. It's very easy to feel ignored.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I work with a lot of people a lot of the time who have that feeling, whether it's in their professional environments or whether it's in other areas of their life that they just feel that they're not being heard, they're being ignored, passed over, or whatever. Is this something you come across a lot as well?
Yeah, happens in people. I mean, I coach people in big companies and team leaders and stuff like that. And they, you know, they can go through similar insecure, kind of, I call it insecure thinking, being ignored, but I know it's got a feeling to it. And then what happens when you start allowing that habitual thinking to continue? Well, for me, when I feel ignored, I want to, we talked about this, then I want to be safe for my own thing. I don't want to go out. If I feel ignored, then I think, well, what's the point? Then I kind of like, I contract.
Yeah.
Which is what we tend to do. We kind of go into this safe space, which I think comes from the early years when you grow up. This is the safe way of doing it.
Well, you asked
me. I use that body language, but that's how I feel.
You asked me the other day about what are the benefits were of being ignored? Like, what's the good side of that? Which was an interesting question that got me thinking. Like, well, yeah, there is a good side of that because I do like kind of being left alone, and I do like, is this that feeling of safety? The unknown is a little scary sometimes,
yeah.
And so you have that feeling of safety where things stay the same. But homeostasis or keeping things the same generally isn't good. It might feel safe on some level because it's what you know, but it's it's really not a good or healthy thing. But I think there are, possibly are part, at least parts of me that don't hate being ignored, that maybe even encourage it to some degree. So there may be a little bit of internal conflict there as well.
Yeah, so maybe there's a part of us that is cool about being ignored. But then the other one, the maybe the younger parts of oneself was ignored. I have parents ignored you, whatever, then you feel safe. But there's another part of you that says, oh, come on, let's try this. Let's go out here. Let's try that. Let's take a bit of a risk. How do you reconcile? I mean, it's just called parts in the brain for people. I know in coaching we do parts, sometimes called parts integration. But imagine there's just different parts of your brain. One's going like that, and the other one says, let's go out. How do you bridge them? How do you create a bridge, or how do you reconcile that?
You don't always. Sometimes it just comes down to which part of you's strongest at the, in that moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so the one that's contracted down is what it is. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just a habitual way of living. I don't think one should judge themselves, and we do. I can judge myself for being weak and ignored and poor me. And if I start judging, that just adds to the story. Yeah. So I need to drop that judgment.
You got me thinking about when I was younger as well, because you asked me something about where this had come up in the past. And certainly I was one of those kids. I think we both agreed we felt this. I've never really felt like I quite fitted in with everyone else and was a little bit different. You know, I had friends, but I wasn't one of the popular kids. I definitely wasn't that. You know, I wasn't super talented, I wasn't super popular or anything like that, and never really quite fitted in. And that sort of showed up as a theme again and again. I think never quite fitted into the mainstream of things. And as a kid, doesn't feel good, because the things you want, especially when you're in your teens, you want to fit in, you want to be popular, you want to be attractive to people and all that sort of thing. And so not fitting into the mainstream feels like the worst thing possible when you're a teenager. But the older I've got, the more I realize how much of an asset it is not fitting into the mainstream. Like, there are the ways of thinking and approach to things and experiences I've had that would never have happened if I had more fitted in like a jigsaw piece into the main part of the puzzle.
Yeah, and then we think, I'm not fitting in. When I was at school, sometimes I didn't fit in. Or when I was in sales some years ago, in sales teams, they were all very kind of attempts, going out, loads of pints of beer, and I wasn't ready that way. I felt out of it. So I thought, there must be something wrong with me.
Right.
That's my mind saying, there must be something wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me. It's just I act the way there are millions and millions of people out there who don't feel part of something, and that's okay. But what's good about not feeling part of that sometimes? Well, I tend to sort of go deeper into things and learn things. And I wouldn't be a coach had I not had this part. It goes into these deeper aspects of what is life all about? What am I about? What motivates me and stuff like that? Yeah. So there's a benefit to it. And it goes from, I thought there was something wrong with me. Well, wow, this is a gift. Am I going to look at the gift, or am I going to look at the curse?
Anything else. Definitely. There's always the right frame. If the right frame to take with something is to look at the opportunity. Always. And I grew up living in different places or all over the place, having to make new friends every time you moved and all that kind of stuff. It was interesting. I don't have regrets about that. I'm not one of those people that has friends from when I was like 4 years old or anything like that, because we moved around too much and ages where I just would never have kept in touch with people anyway. But I'm okay with it, because it also left me more of a sort of global citizen, if you like. I can be home anywhere. Anywhere can be home. So I don't feel like one place is home for me, which I think is a positive. The reason I'm bringing it up is because one of the things that I saw with my dad, like, although he had us traveling around a lot, he had risen up through the ranks of the business that he was in. And I found out more as I got older, of course, but he also kept getting passed over for a promotion, or people who he ended up training were getting promoted above him because they were like on graduate programs and stuff like this. And my dad didn't have all of that. And he just kind of went with it. And accepted it as that's how it is. And I guess the family's like, okay, that's up to him to do that. If that's how he wants to handle that situation. But I'd made a decision that I can't be like that. I'm not going to be ignored. I'm not going to be, if I get passed over, I'm going to say something. If I am being ignored, you're going to know about it. And so that is something that I feel that was a positive lesson for me to take away from that, saying, you know, I could do the same thing as my dad and just hope that people notice me and treat me well.
Mm.
Or I speak up and say something, do something, you know, let my voice be heard. And I made that choice to do that. So, you know, this is very much a situational thing. I'm not so much talking about social kind of things, but there are many times and places in life where if we just accept that we are being ignored, we maybe even have come to start thinking that we should be, that we deserve
to
be.
I should be because my dad was ignored or my mum was ignored or whatever. My brother was ignored.
Right. I don't have the right background. I don't have the right popularity. I don't fit in with the right groups of people. I'm not mainstream or whatever else. It's like, well, maybe those are valid reasons to be ignored. So you might actually end up buying into, and I think I did to a great degree for a long time, buy into the story of why I probably should.
Yeah. It's a thought. I should be ignored. It's a story. It's a thought. And maybe it's not yours. Maybe it's not your thought. Maybe you got it from somebody else, but you've taken it on. You've inherited a thought from someone else. That sometimes a lot of our thoughts are our own, but we think they're on and we start believing in them.
Yeah. Because I work with a lot of speakers and communicators particularly, it does show up regularly as an issue. And I would say, I don't think this is at all sexist to say, it is much more common for women to feel ignored, especially in workplaces, in speaking situations, in professional environments.
Yeah.
Is much more common, and to feel that their voices aren't really being heard or they aren't really being recognized in any sort of significant way. Not to say it doesn't happen to men as well, but I hear it much more from female clients than from male clients.
Well, what an opportunity for a woman who's been feeling ignored and notice her mother was being ignored to stand up and say, get a message out. No, that's it. And the buck stops here. I'm not going to allow this story to play out of my mind for the rest of my life. I've got something to say to the world about whatever. And go say it and speak it and present it. You know, you teach people to present.
Some of the issues start to become, well, how do you present that? Because I think one of the challenges can be, like, if this is something you allow to keep going and going, it frustrates you and you bottle up all the frustration and the pain around that, there's a good chance that at some point it's just the lid's going to blow and you will have a response to some situation that you won't be happy with and could actually cause some problems for you. So you don't really want to get to that situation where you have to blow your lid just to be heard. And it might actually be some unsuspecting soul just says the wrong thing at the right time. But that whole gestalt of experiences suddenly comes together and you know, the champagne cork pops and it sprays everywhere. So it's important to figure out how you're going to do this in the right way. Like, make the decision in advance. I refuse to be ignored. So how am I going to make myself heard? Without
much it more, being... it's an assertive way, Ryan. So, right, I want people to hear me now. Sod everyone.
Yeah.
Rather than being against something, be for something, if that makes sense. But I mean, how do you help people go through the step to be kind of like assertive and firm and calm who feel ignored or feel left out or feel in a certain injustice?
This is a very situational thing, but very often one of the places where this comes up the most is people in meetings. They find in meetings with, whether it's with people who they actually work with or in general, like professional meetings, that their voice may not be recognized or heard. And so I think it is a little bit of a little bit of persistence here and listen and be gentle about this to a degree, but the gentle but firm side of things of saying, well, you can say, you can't really say you're not listening to me because you're going to shut down conversation. You're going to put barriers up there. So it's better to say something like, I'm not feeling heard right now. So I'm wondering if I can put this in another way or express it, and we can have a conversation about what's really being said here so that I can make sure that I am actually being heard. Because there are situations where you may want to do that outside of a meeting where you say someone, some of their behaviors were in there, I didn't feel comfortable with it. I'm not saying you necessarily did anything wrong, or just felt like, what you didn't pay attention to me or to anything that I was saying, or I didn't feel like you were taking me seriously, which may not be the case, but is that something we can talk about? This is very diplomatic ways of approaching these kinds of situations, I think. And
yeah,
I think it is better in professional situations to aim for diplomacy, unless someone is being outright horrible or rude, in which case I feel like, If you can feel strong enough to, and it's not going to get you sacked, although it might be circumstances where you're okay with that, to just say, this is, I'm not happy being spoken to like this.
I've got an issue sometimes with anger, but you can use anger in a very positive way where you say, you know what, enough is enough. I'm done with not being heard. I'm done with being ignored. I'm just done with it. You draw a line in the sand and you say, right, from now on, I'm going to start moving in a new direction.
I think you do have to, make the decision for yourself. Yeah. I certainly felt like I did. Right. It was definitely a decision point for me of saying, you know what, I'm not prepared to go through my life being ignored or have these situations where I'm feeling left out. I have to have those boundaries around that. I haven't always enforced them as strongly as I might want to, but they are there. And I do generally at some point, even when there have been maybe exceptions to the rule that I haven't enforced my own boundaries as much as I should have, at some point I usually end up doing it and wishing I'd done it sooner. So I think it is generally better to have that decision in advance, because our brains just aren't really, they don't function in a way that we can just keep making the decisions or do everything spontaneously. It's far easier to have these heuristics, these mental shortcuts, which are already decided in advance. And I find this with something as simple as going and working out every day, which I do, but I never used to. But I do because I don't anymore have that argument or discussion in my head in the morning, am I going to do this? It's already decided. The alarm goes off, I get up and I go out to the gym. So the decision is already made, and it's a heuristic. It's a mental shortcut. My kit's all ready to go. I don't give myself any reasons to allow that discussion around it in my head of the part of me that would rather sleep in, or against the part of me that says, you're going to feel better for doing this afterwards. And the more consistently I've done that, the easier it has become. Anything where we can give ourselves these shortcuts, like the one in this kind of situation, this is how I show up, or this is my boundary, this is my decision, it makes it easier to know exactly how you should be showing up and responding in those situations.
Yeah. Now, like what you said about the making the decision to go to the gym every morning, it's easy to allow your moods to take you out.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you follow your mood, it's just going to sabotage you, and I know moods are strong, but whether I'm feeling in the mood or not, I decided to go. You also set the conditions up. You've got your gym bag ready in the morning. You have to go looking for your stuff. So you're setting conditions up to go to the gym or whatever it is that you want to do. Yeah. That's so important.
But one of the big reasons in life why people don't take action is because they don't feel like it.
Yeah.
And so that's exactly what you're talking about here, of like your mood. It's like, well, yeah, the chances are you aren't going to feel like it. And if your mood is dictating your action, then you're not going to have a lot to show for that, other than probably some frustration.
Well, you end up becoming your mood. I know. I woke up this morning in a mood, shall I do exercise or not? I thought, I drew a line that I'm going to do my exercise. And I went for a walk as well. And I wasn't in the greatest of moods, but I'm not going to do it from my mood, but I'm aware of the mood. It's a bit like getting on a bus with a low, imagine the low mood bus coming along. Do I have to get on that bus? Automatically, we get on the low mood bus. But no, the low mood bus is here, but you're saying, no, I'm not going to go on that bus. I'm going to go to the gym. But that needs awareness, doesn't it?
It does. It does mean you have to think about things a lot. And this is one of the things that came up in our conversation about how I feel like you can always really tell when somebody is done some work on themselves, like some kind of reflection or personal development, because they have usually that bit more self-awareness than most people do, because a lot of people don't really stop to reflect on themselves or their lives or think about who they are or how they want to be showing up or the sort of results they want to see. And so taking that time out is not always easy in a busy life, but without it, everything's just going to keep carrying on. The hustle and bustle of the world will keep carrying you through from cradle to grave if you let it, without taking that step back and saying that this isn't how I want to be continuing.
Yeah, so reflection time is important. Just reflect what's working in my life, what isn't.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of stuff.
And so we're talking about how I was moved away from that sort of being ignored kind of thing. I think one of the places where I've probably felt it the most has been online, because it's very easy to feel like you're sort of shouting into the void online, you know, posting YouTube videos or social media content all over the place. It's very easy to be ignored. But it's also very easy to undervalue the people who do view you or do follow you and do pay attention to what you do. And I was thinking about this, I was doing open mic stand-up comedy last night, and I was thinking about this last night and this morning. I tend to wind things over in my head anyway around this stuff, but that open mic nights are an opportunity to test out material, or for new comics, which is kind of what I am really, my third time I think doing open mic, for new comics to get some experience and try stuff out. You know, there's an expectation, and I was even finding myself having this expectation on myself last night of, I should already be at the standard of a professional comedian. And I'm not. And it's gonna take time if I want to get to that kind of standard. But is that really, now, I don't know if that's really the goal anyway, but the expectation is kind of there. And I think sometimes even with open mic audiences, you know, I was chatting with some of the other comedians about open mic nights, and one guy was saying he did this open mic in New York. And he said, yeah, the audiences there are a little different, because generally they're okay, but some of them will come in hoping that some famous comedian will come in and test out their material, and they want to see that. So they don't have a lot of tolerance for the new people who are just testing stuff out, getting some experience, and aren't at that polished professional level yet either. And so to having that expectation of yourself of, well, you should already be here, I should already be, every joke should be landing, everything should be a success. You know, I was watching the playback, I recorded the whole thing. I was watching the playback, and it's like there were a couple of groans for some of my jokes, which is okay. There was responses to everything, but it wasn't all laughs.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were laughs as well. And so I think, well, yeah, people weren't like falling over hysterical laughter like they might do with professional comics, but I'm being hard on myself. I got laughs. I got up and did this.
Yeah, you did it. You stood up. You took action. The risk is I could have been ignored, criticized, whatever. But, you know, we worked with Harv Eker, who was a platform speaker. I know he's retired now, personal development speaker. He had a quote, every master was once a disaster. Yeah, you don't just become a master at something in 10 minutes. And you might get ignored for the first couple of performances, but you've got to keep persisting on whatever you want to do. All right, if they ignore me, they ignore me. But if you go to your old program and say, oh, they ignored me, I better shut down and stay safe and not go out anymore. Well,
this is exactly it. Like the first guy who was up last night, and he wasn't the only one that this happened to, but the first guy was up, he completely bombed. His whole act bombed. There's only, like myself, it was only his third time doing open mic. So it's like, again, probably being really hard on himself about it. But I chatted with him afterwards and said, look, we're saying, oh, yeah, I kind of bombed. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, you pretty much did. You know, there's no doubt about it. No laughs, and the audience weren't quite buying into the acts and stuff. Something didn't quite land. So it's like everything doesn't mean that the jokes can't work. It means they may need work. Your delivery may need work. You have to play with this stuff, tinker with it. This is what professionals do anyway. And I say, you will be back for another open mic night, right? He hasn't put you off. You're like, oh, no, I'll be back. And it's like, that's exactly the attitude of
exactly.
You're not going to get better at stuff unless you stick with it and go through, I think Seth Godin calls it the dip. Such a good book, The Dip.
Yeah.
You haven't read it, but we have to go through the dip and have to suck at stuff for a while or have the failures.
Yeah.
Have the times where we bomb to get there. And if we're being ignored, like you said, big Lord, we have to keep coming back and have some persistence with it and make that decision of it's not failure. It's just, well, we have to keep failing the way to the successes.
As I say, in Silicon Valley, fail forward fast. And like anything else, we're going to try out a new idea, a new speech, a new message, if you're a platform speaker. Don't expect to get it right first time. It might take 4, 5, 6. They call it success by iteration. You keep trying this, trying that, trying this, trying that. It's going to fail. People are not laughing. You just keep going. And if you give up, then okay, you give up. But maybe after 50 times, it's still not working. And maybe you need to look at that.
I think all too often as well, we hold ourselves to the standards of the people who are most successful.
Yeah.
And that's not always the best standard. You're comparing your step one to someone else's step 20. And it's an unfair comparison on yourself because these people probably have been through the processes of the failures of sucking at stuff. They probably do have bad content out there. But maybe they've taken it down now because they've got everything polished and whatever else. But and if you're feeling ignored online, well, I think there's a few things that certainly advice I've followed of narrow down the platforms where you're trying to be, get attention. Like if you're business focused, then focus maybe more on LinkedIn. I focus a bit more on YouTube now because I was feeling like my podcast is being ignored a lot on podcast channels. And it's very hard to get any traction and growth on audio podcast channels, but it's a lot easier to get that on YouTube. And I've had a lot more success with that, a lot more downloads, a lot more attention. Is it at the level of people who are successful and making tens of thousands on YouTube? Well, no, it's not. But am I going to stick with it? Absolutely, I am. Yeah. But it's still frustrating that you feel like, well, I'm not at that level. But you have to stay strategic about it and stay on track with it.
And change your approach as you go along, right? You've only one thing to another. How can I see this differently? What else can I do? And it's just constantly having an open mind. We talk about growth mindset rather than a fixed one.
Yeah,
they're ignoring me. It's not working. I might as well give up. Okay. Again, that's a choice.
And most people would see that as a failure. And a lot of people won't try again afterwards. They just say, all right, well, I tried it. I hear this a lot from clients, Jay. I tried it and it didn't work. Okay. Try it again.
Yeah. In a different way.
Yeah.
It's a bit like standing in a room. If I keep standing on the right side of the room, I'm going to see the room from one perspective. And I think, well, that's how the room is. But maybe I need to move to the left side of the room. Then I'll see it from another perspective. Maybe we'll have more light coming in.
Yeah.
I'm just giving you an example of a room, a metaphor of just changing positions, maybe changing perspectives in the brain.
One of the things that I had to ask myself and be honest about was what I was not being prepared to do, or what I hadn't been doing in order to be more visible and to be more noticed. And there's quite a lot that I just either haven't done or maybe have been avoiding doing that could be done to be more visible. And this whole sometimes you just find yourself hoping or waiting that stuff will get delivered to you, if you like. It's like a magical Amazon delivery of here's your success, here's your package, it's just coming on the truck right now.
So what would you recommend to someone who is trying to get their message out or be a presenter, speaker, or it could be a coach, it could be an author. What would your recommendations be? Because you've talked about experiencing being ignored and then there's safety issues, but tell me.
I think there's certainly a lot we could go into here, but I want to try and keep it simple. I think some of the most essential things are to be clear on what you want to talk about and who you think you want to talk to. And it's okay if that changes in the future. Goodness knows I've pivoted on stuff and moved into different areas because you will evolve. Your content will evolve. Your ability to evolve will as well. but also make the decision that this is what you want to do. And that the real goal is to have the persistence and the iteration with it and to get through as many failures as possible and learn from them so that you can get to the successes. Because, you know, do you think it's better to put out as good a content as you can manage to put out without getting perfectionist about it, rather than just to churn out masses of content or social media posts? I think quality as best you can is mostly going to beat quantity for the great degree. But if you can get some balance between them, you can get out there and you can get heard. But one of the biggest things that slowed me down was not getting help. Was not reaching out to anyone who could have helped me or advanced me, or not making the connections, building my network, getting coaching, whatever it is. You know, there's so many things that could have helped to progress things. You have to be strategic about it. And so just deciding what you want is going to be, what you want to aim for is going to be a lot stronger than just saying, well, let's see what happens. Let's just start doing something and hope that something happens. Like, hope is really not a good strategy. It's no strategy at all, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, it's important to enroll the support of others, being a coach or whoever it might, a mentor, you know, ask. If you're starting out, it's like, who can I enroll to help me fulfill this particular vision?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do it alone. You can try doing it alone, but it's hard work.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this with the comedy stuff and I've been doing a lot of storytelling stuff this year as well. And the more I do that, I was thinking, well, hanging around in those sorts of environments with people who are doing those things helps me to grow and expands my network and so many other benefits as well. And same thing with that, if you have goals to be a speaker or a communicator or a trainer or something along those lines, and you feel like you're not really being heard or noticed, There's a lot you can do, but I think spending time with other people who are on that track is going to help.
Yeah. Being around like-minded people. I mean, we've read the books, for example, Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill. If people want to get a template for success, I'm not saying it's the ultimate one. He spent 20 years interviewing the richest people in America. How do they think success is? He talks about persistence and all sorts of stuff, but one of the key things has become a worldwide phenomenon is the mastermind principle, hanging around with like-minded people.
Yeah.
If you're hanging around with people who are saying you can't do it, you won't do it.
Yeah. And you're trying something out and your closest people, your partner, parents, whoever is telling you, oh, well, that didn't work or that was terrible. And you've only just started doing it. You're going to want to stop doing it as quick as possible.
My good intentions are, therefore what I'm doing, I must be crazy, so I'll stop doing it.
Right. Don't expect other people to understand, but maybe if you can, at least ask them to support rather than to tear you down and say, you know what, it's okay, it sucks. You know, one of the only reasons I even did my first open mic night, which most people would be terrified of doing, I'm not saying I wasn't scared of doing it, I put it off for a long time because I was, but one of the reasons I think that I was able to do it was because I lowered the stakes for myself. I didn't have to be a huge comedy success. I didn't have to be, right, I'm going to be discovered as some amazing stand-up comedian. All I needed to do to be a success for me that night was to get up there and do it, because it was such a fear factor thing for me that was blocking me from doing it. It's, you know, like a parachute jump or something like that. It's like, well, of course you want those to be successful, but you know, one of the biggest things that would stop people from doing it is the fear factor. And the same with this, so that, well, that's the main fear factor. If I do that, that's already a success. If I don't get any laughs or whatever else, okay, I think I'll still do it again, but at least I will have gotten up there and given this a go to take that first step.
Yeah, I just coached a guy in a big company. He's got a team, and he says, engineering software guy, he just said, most of my team members want big successes. Well, why don't you just start with the small ones? We did the presentation. We got the basic document right. We got the basic plan right. Start with the small and build on the small. Oh, you know, you said I stood up on stage and gave my talk. That's a success. Oh, no, it's not. No, I didn't have a round of applause from all these people. Doesn't matter. You stood up for the first time on a stage in front of all these people. One person clapped. Great. That's the start, isn't it?
And the thing is, most people do recognize in audiences as well, whether it's comedy, storytelling, professionals, public speaking, whatever, they do recognize how difficult it is. And so when they see somebody maybe who does struggle with the nerves or their first time doing it, they get it.
Yeah.
There's really not that many people who are going to be harsh about it or cruel or that, oh, well, you suck. You can't do it. Most people are somewhat more empathetic and would be more on the lines of, well, like, oh yeah, maybe it wasn't great, but you did it. You got up there and you gave a talk. And we undervalue these little achievements too much because we all think we need to go from zero to hero in 60.
It's a common problem with people, and they're looking for perfection. Again, I'm going to Carl Ecker again, he said, sloppy success is better than perfect mediocrity. I love that quote. Sloppy success is better than perfect mediocrity.
I've heard that before, which surprises me.
Just freaking do it.
Or I'd forgotten about it. But either I don't know.
Or taking perfect action if you want to be less, it's about taking it. And that's a big issue with a lot of people. Now I can't start until, I mean, I do as well. And waiting is also resistance, by the way. I'll wait till the kids have finished school. I'll wait till the summer's over. I'll wait to blah, blah, blah. I do it myself at times. I notice that. But it's just be sloppy. Stand on the stage. Give your first speech. If people laugh, they laugh. If they don't, they don't.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest things that holds people back, one of the places that this fear factor really comes from, is our fear of judgment, of negative judgment from other people. What will people say? What will people think of me? And this is very relevant to all the stuff we talked about in this chat, because those times of, should I speak up? What will people say? What will people think of me? How will they view me? They might start to view me differently. So, well, good. Do you want things to stay the same? Because you're not happy with that. So, but you might have to go through some discomfort to get there. And people generally don't want to do that. Everyone wants their easy life, their smooth ride. And
you do.
It ain't like that. I like the sloppy success.
Sloppy success, yeah. It's a great quote. And a lot of people resonate with that.
Yeah, I think it's probably a great quote to wrap this up with. So better to have...
I think it came from Harv Eker, but it was one of his co-speakers on stage some years back.
Okay.
It was an experiment.
Well, it could well be. It doesn't matter who it came from. That's a great quote. Sloppy success is better than perfect mediocrity.
Sloppy success is better than perfect mediocrity. Just be sloppy. Get your first software product out. Get your first version of the different kind, you've got a phone that you're developing, get the phone out or whatever, get your first coaching program out. It's not going to be perfect.
Yeah. And make the decision that you're not going to be ignored. You're going to be seen, do the stuff that will get you noticed, get yourself heard. Because if you're waiting for it all to come to you, I can tell you this from personal experience, if you're waiting for that to all come to you, it's going to be a long wait. For most people, there are those times. There are exceptions to this rule. There are definitely people who get spotted. Someone sees something and says, "All right, we're going to give them an opportunity." And don't resent them. Don't resent them for it. Good luck to them. But people all too often undervalue or underestimate the amount of luck that goes into a lot of people's success, because sometimes it is getting spotted by the right person or meeting the right connection or whatever else. Those things, those opportunities for success can only really happen when you are out there and being going for sloppy success.
Yeah, the more you're out there, the more lucky you get, I guess. You're bound to meet someone or someone who's got someone who knows someone who'll help you, but you put yourself out there.
Stick with it, right?
Yeah, interesting.
Stick with it.
I mean, good. By the way, I'm not perfect with any of this stuff.
No, me either.
I mean, this is what I've noticed when I've coached lots and lots of people over the many years, how most people have the similar mental dynamics of what holds them back, keeps them safe. Some of them are afraid of success. That's another one, not just afraid of failure. Yes. The biggie.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Afraid of success, afraid of failure. It's all that stuff that keeps you stuck. James, thank you for
Andrew, it's been a good chat.
It has been a good chat. And I'm happy to let the audience in on what I get to experience on a pretty much weekly basis with you in our little chat. So
I like it because I don't know what we're going to talk about next and it unfolds. And this little podcast has been a result of allowing it to unfold. It's been good, Johnny. Thanks for inviting me on.
Thanks, James.
Speak soon.
So feeling ignored isn't the end of the story. It can be the start of a new one. Whether that's deciding not to wait for opportunities, reframing rejection, or just daring to show up a little sloppier but a lot braver, you get to choose. And if this conversation between James and myself resonated with you somehow, please share it with someone who you think might need the reminder that their voice matters. And if you're done waiting to be noticed, hit subscribe and join me here because the more we speak up, the harder we are to ignore. See you next time.